Going through the wrongful conviction of something you didn't do, how are you feeling during this period in your life?
It was one of the most horrifying experiences anyone could ever go through, you know, being taken away from your family, being wrongly convicted and not knowing whether you were ever going to see the outside world again. I mean, it was a horrendous experience.
How did you finally begin making progress with pleading your innocence?
First 2 years, I went through the drink and drug stage in prison. I mean, I went through the downward spiral first before I managed to pick myself up and actually fight back. But the turning point for me was when I met other innocent people inside, like the Birmingham Six and the Guildford Four, and they were helping me, you know, to write letters to MPs and journalists. And I started getting very angry. And then when I started getting angry, I started motivating myself. And it was then that I decided that I would study law. And this is what I did in prison. And then the fight back began from there.
How did you manage to convince the other members of the prison that you were innocent as well?
Well, there was a number of prisoners, like the Guildford Four and Birmingham Six. As I said, it was the Cowbridge Water. They all saw the signs, you know, that I was angry, that I was very self-destructive. You know, they looked at my case, they seen the evidence, and they felt that I belonged, you know, in the same bracket as what they did, a true miscarriage of justice victim. They could see that I wasn't cut out for prison. And I stood out like a sore thumb, to be honest with you. And it showed, you know, and it showed to other prisoners as well.
How did it feel when people finally began to actually listen to you, like after you realised that, or people started realising you were innocent?
Well, it was brilliant in the sense, like, we started getting TV and radio programmes being made about our case. And when that started happening, I knew then that, you know, we had a chance to prove it through the media. And the media played a significant part in highlighting our wrongful conviction. And once people looked at the case very closely, you could see there was something not right with this case from the very beginning. And it certainly gave me hope and gave me strength to fight even harder than what I did in the beginning. You know, it spurred me on.
And do you think the law has learned from making this mistake themselves?
Well, I think things have actually got worse since I've come out. You only got to look at the compensation scheme. You know, innocent people only last week were refused compensation for years they spent in prison because they're saying you've got to prove your innocence now. That's number one. And number two, you know, trying to overturn a conviction now is even harder than what it was before. You know, I feel the Criminal Cases Review Commission are being starved of resources, and therefore, you know, it's resulting in less cases being referred back to the Court of Appeal.
We know that you've also got a book published called Death of Justice. So could you give us an overview of why you wrote it and what you hope people can learn from it by reading it?
Well, the Death of Justice, first of all proceeds from the book go to my son's charity, the Dylan O'Brien Foundation. I hope that's okay to say. But I wrote it because I wanted it to inspire people to see that you can overturn convictions, but you've got to, the wrongly convicted person must start to educate himself in prison. And I wanted to show the families as well that, you know, what to do, the campaign inside of it, what worked, what didn't work, and hopefully inspire others to fight back too. So I hope I've gone a little way to achieving that.
Yeah, and what would you say to a person that perhaps is going through a miscarriage of justice as well themselves, and what advice would you give them to cope with something like that?
Never, ever, ever give up. I think that's the most important. There's sometimes where you feel like you want to give up. That is the time you've got to dig deep and then find yourself. You know, write to MPs, write to journalists, write to everyone you can think of, members of Parliament, European Parliament, you know, and try and get your case heard in the European courts. You know, there's so much you can do now. There's more groups out there. There's the Miscarriage of Justice Organisation. There's a group called Innocent. None of these groups existed when I was there. I didn't have the luxury of having these groups to, you know, assist us with an appeal. So my advice was, you know, to take a good look at these avenues and get these people on board, because you know that is a first sign of, you know, once they've accepted you may be an innocent person, the more chance you've got of people of listening to you.
And would it give you closure to find out who actually committed the crime, or do you feel it doesn't really concern you, or do you really want to, like, to get closure, you want to know?
I really want to know who killed Philip Saunders, the victim in this particular case. I put up a reward money on two occasions to try and catch the real killer, hoping new evidence would come to light. But with the passage of time and the way things are fading, you know, it's like 30 years coming up to now since this all happened, I'm not very hopeful that the real killer is going to be caught. And there's some time in your life where you've got to draw a line under it and say, right then, I've done all I can, now I've got to move on. And I think I've got to that stage at the moment where I feel, you know, the forensic evidence in the case, there's not enough evidence there to convict anyone, you know, and that's why I think it's time for me to move on.
Okay, thank you very much, Michael.
No problem at all. I hope I've been of some assistance.
You have. Thank you very much.